Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Young Women Transform podcast. I'm Heather Risley from USAID's Office of Education. To give you a bit of background, USAID's goals in international education are to work with the entire U.S. government and other partners to improve learning outcomes. That means just that kids aren't just in school, but also learning. And we're also working to expand access to quality basic education for all, particularly the marginalized and vulnerable populations, the ones who are usually left behind. The work we do is pretty wide-ranging. We work across the education spectrum, from pre-primary, secondary, and all the way through higher education. In this podcast, we're specifically focusing on youth and their ability to gain meaningful employment. I'm also joined by my co-host, Lindsay Wolf. Lindsay is with a USAID-funded project called Youth Power Learning, and it's led by an organization called Making Sense International. Youth Power Learning is focused on advancing the approach that we call at USAID, positive youth development. So Lindsay, you want to tell us a bit more about what you work on?
Thanks, Heather. Since 2015, I've been involved in a USAID initiative called Youth Power, which is expanding the evidence base for what we call positive youth development and an assets-based approach to youth development programming. We seek to improve the capacity of youth-led and youth-serving institutions and engage young people, their families, communities, and governments so that youth can reach their full potential. In 2018, Youth Power launched a prize competition called the Young Women Transform Prize. The competition was designed to support youth-led programs working to improve the lives of women and to allow those of us working in international education to learn from their successes and potential struggles. As part of the prize, small grants were awarded to groups helping to remove barriers to young women's economic empowerment. The goal was to enable these groups to further develop and implement their programs. And we specifically wanted ideas that were youth-led and youth-serving in low- and middle-income countries. There were a large number of applicants, and ultimately 8 of them were awarded grants.
We at USAID are very excited about this initiative. We really designed it with learning in mind. Just because we're technical experts in youth employment, it doesn't mean that we know what works in every context or what's going on around the world. So part of what informed this particular initiative was really understanding what is working on the ground within these particular programs, both from those that are using somewhat newer approaches, and then some of these other grantees are really using more tried and true methods, and we're also using the grants to help them scale up some of those initiatives as well. So we're really excited to explore in this podcast what is working on the ground, what some of these challenges are, and really share that with a wider community through this podcast and making sure that these lessons learned are disseminated more widely. That said, this podcast is really going to focus in on 2 specific countries where these grantees are based. One of them is in Uganda, and this is the Safe Plan program. And the other is in Kenya. It's called the Kibera Community Empowerment Organization, or KCEO. We're going to be actually traveling to these 2 countries and meeting with people on the ground to really understand how these women and their youth peers are really driving this work on the ground. And we're really excited to be able to meet with them and talk with them a bit more on this podcast. So you'll be hearing from a variety of different people from Uganda and from Kenya, and we want to take you along in that journey. Before we get on that plane and go out to these countries, I wanted to have more of a conversation with Lindsay today to get a better sense of how Making Sense International, and she in particular, has really managed this prize and awarding grants to grantees that are really small organizations in places that USAID doesn't necessarily work with as frequently. And this is not as common of an approach for USAID. And the larger agency is really looking at how to diversify its partner base, making sure that development is locally led. But that also means that it has some particular challenges with organizations that are managing those grants. So I wanted to ask you a few questions about how that was like for you and your organization, and then also to get a little bit more information on the programs themselves. With that, if you could just start by speaking a little bit about how you've been involved in this prize since the beginning, how did the idea come about from your end, and how did this really get off the ground?
Sure. Thanks, Heather. So the prize was established as a public-private partnership. USAID approached Standard Chartered Bank and Volvo Group, the car maker, to be a part of this prize, which is also part of USAID's priorities in private sector engagement. And all of these entities were very interested, as you mentioned, in reaching those that are harder to reach in terms of beneficiaries, as well as youth-led and youth-serving institutions, and those that usually have a more difficult time obtaining funding for their projects. So we were really intentional about that from the beginning and how we designed the prize program and the application process to make sure that we were reaching those local organizations that do not usually have access to those type of funding.
Great. Yeah, thanks. So what was the process like of actually creating the prize? You know, it's one thing to hold the actual competition in a U.S. city or town that happens fairly frequently, but it's completely different to host a competition that covers multiple countries and the people speak multiple different languages, have multiple ranges of experiences, both in sort of budgeting and project management and, you know, even their sort of technical approaches. So how did you go about doing that?
Yes, absolutely. We had to be very intentional about that from the start. The first thing we did was look at the traditional grant application form and really cut that back to something that was much more accessible, to a more simple, straightforward application form for these organizations to complete. We also created an accessible online platform for the submission of the applications. We utilized both our traditional networks as well as other networks that we hadn't previously reached of youth-led organizations internationally to really reach the grassroots organizations that are working at a very local level with young women in their communities. Overall, that was a very successful initiative. We received over 1,000 expressions of interest in the prize through that online portal, and ultimately received 365 completed applications, from which we narrowed down to 8. So it was very successful in reaching those groups that traditionally do not have access to these types of opportunities.
And sounds like a pretty big lift going through all those applications and narrowing down the best ones. I'm sure you were pretty busy during that time. So in terms of reviewing those applications, what specifically were you looking for in the proposed ideas?
So we actually had two types of prizes that we were awarding. The first was a recognition prize, and the grantees that we're visiting in Uganda and Kenya are both recognition prize awardees, meaning that they had previously implemented an activity that addressed a barrier to young women's economic empowerment and wanted to learn from that innovation. And we also had another category called creation prizes, which were proposing a new idea or a more traditional idea being implemented in a new way that were to then implement that idea and see the outcome of it, see how successful that idea was. So ultimately, across both types of prizes, we were looking for those that were really reaching the most hard to reach, that were youth-led, had strong youth-led or youth engagement components, that proposed an idea we hadn't heard of or utilized an existing approach in a new way, those that clearly had worked with their community to identify the needs of the young women in that community and then meaningfully engage those young women in the program design, and for those that had cross-sectoral approaches and or outcomes.
So you were mentioning the creation prizes, where you were awarding some funding to organizations that were testing either a new idea or they were taking a more traditional approach in a new context. So are there going to be formal evaluations of those particular programs across all of them or some of them? Or how are we looking at how those are working?
So the objective of the learning grants in general, as we implement them on Youth Power, is really to learn what's working and the best approaches in different areas. So each of these grantees has proposed a learning plan, a learning and sharing plan, where they'll be doing, depending on the grant activity, different ways of sharing out sort of what they've learned. So we have reports, case studies, talk shows like this one that we're on, videos, and other documentation that will document what's working from what they've implemented. One of the recognition prizes that we're not visiting is actually an evaluation of their program. So there's all different levels of rigor in terms of how they're being evaluated, and we're actually tracking some key indicators across all of the grantees in terms of some of the changes that we're seeing in the young people in their programs.
as much as I would love this, we can't travel to all of the 8 prize winners around the world. Turns out we don't have money to do global trips, but we do have the opportunity to travel to see Safe Plan in Uganda and KCEO. Can you describe what each of the program's concept pitches were?
Sure. So very different programs that we're going to be visiting. In Safe Plan Uganda's program, they're in a rural area of northwest Uganda. They're working with rural, out-of-school young mothers who don't have any kind of access to income. So they're actually doing a beekeeping training program for these young women, and they're training them on how to build an apiary site, which we'll be visiting those when we get in country, which is very exciting, and how to take care of and nurture their bees by planting all the plants around the apiaries that the bees like, and how to process the honey. And then they actually have a cooperative that is buying the honey from the women and selling it onto market. So they receive a lot of training in terms of business skills and financial management skills to run their beekeeping operations. So one very unique rural program. And then in Nairobi, we're visiting an organization that works in Kibera, which is the largest slum in Kenya, that is working with disabled young mothers and caregivers of disabled children to help them do small micro entrepreneurship activities like making jewelry or selling at a local stall. And they're providing them with entrepreneurship training, digital literacy training, and a safe space for these mothers who are traditionally quite marginalized and isolated in their communities and don't have any access to income either. So we're both organizations are working with young women, but in very different ways in their different contexts.
Yeah, I'm really excited to visit both. And I think we need to add to our schedule buying some honey. It seems pretty important as part of this process. Okay, so what stood out to you the most about Safe Plan's approach in particular?
Safe Plan is very much rooted in the needs of their community. Their office is located in Misindi, which is kind of a tourist spot if you're going out to the national parks on safari. But the project site is an hour north of that in a very rural area. You'll see when we get to this village, if you're not going to that village, there's no reason to be there. So there's very little economic opportunity for these women. And they're very, very grateful and appreciative for the opportunity to earn an income, to have a livelihood for themselves and their families that they would otherwise not have. This area is very, very poor. The majority of the people there work for a dollar a day in the sugarcane fields. So there's not a lot of opportunity. So this program is really addressing the needs of this community in a very impactful way for these young women who would not have any other opportunities otherwise.
And how about in Kibera? Did anything in particular catch your attention about their approach?
Yes, absolutely. This organization is very much dedicated to improving the lives of disabled young women and disabled people in general in Nairobi and in Kenya. There's a lot of stigma and taboo when you are born with a disability in this country. They're very much dedicated to improving the lives of these disabled young women. And again, without the support from this organization, it's unclear if they would have any other opportunities. So this is very transformative for them in that it is getting them out of their homes and able to earn an income in a context would otherwise that would be very hard for them.
As we've said before, this podcast and this trip that we're going to be going on is really focused on the learning here. We've worked together to identify some very specific areas where we have questions as an agency, and it aligns with the designs of the programs that we've funded. And I want to dig into a little bit more about these particular themes that we've identified. It really ranges from what does it mean to be a youth-led program, a truly youth-led program, how positive youth development operates among a specific group of more marginalized and vulnerable populations, which is different than your sort of more traditional mainstream populations. They have particular barriers and particular needs that they need to be considered. And also a little bit more about the nature of program design in this area. So I'm just going to set up a few questions here to dig in a little more about those themes, and then we'll be learning more about them as we speak to the grantee organizations themselves. So could you explain a little bit more on what you hope to learn from this trip in particular, and explain a bit more about what this whole youth-led concept really means?
So it's something that Youth Power Learning has been investigating and unpacking for the past 4 years, and we're continuing to do so. For us, youth-led programming is really about meaningfully engaging youth, which means listening to them and then acting upon what they tell you, being really intentional about asking youth what they need, what that looks like in terms of what they want, their aspirations, and how they'd like to get there, and what supports they need to get there. What I'd like to learn more about when we visit these organizations is how are they engaging their youth? What are the youth telling them? How is that informed what they're doing with their activities? And how do they document and pivot as needed around things that youth tell them? And I think we'll see some of that when we speak to these organizations about how they've done needs assessments in their communities, how they're doing feedback surveys and feedback loops with the young people to really make sure that their programs and their approaches are responsive to these youth's needs in a very fast-paced world. You know, there's constantly changing economies in these countries, and so how are they making sure that their programs are really setting these youths up for success in the context of their countries for the future?
So based on that explanation, that's a pretty different way of running a program from the traditional way that USAID thinks about programming, which is can be a little bit more of a kind of command and control sort of approach, although we're moving away from that approach generally. But it means you don't always have the answers at the outset. So designing a program with not knowing everything from the get-go can be a little bit scary, can be a little bit challenging. But with the youth-led approach, we're really looking at integrating youth voices and needs throughout the whole entire process. So given that kind of an approach, what kind of questions are you interested in asking and learning about when it comes to program design for these types of approaches?
So I've been thinking about sort of how to ask how the youth voices have been incorporated into program design. I think we have seen that in some of these approaches, but I think something that I'd like to know a little bit more about is how do you design a program when you don't have all the answers at the outset? How do you build in that cycle of learning and adaptation and documenting so that you can continue to learn and adapt your approaches? So I think we'll be looking at how they've engaged the youth in their programs and the staff in the programs to really listen to the youth, understand if they're getting what they need out of the programs, and if the programs need to be adapted as a result of that. And what are the tools, what are the supports that they're using to better inform their program design?
We're also looking at the issue of employment for young women. All around the world, women in particular face a lot of barriers when it comes to employment. In a lot of cases, more so than men, but for a lot of different reasons, depending on the context. What are the barriers from your experience in the programming that you've seen? What are the barriers that women face in particular in these settings?
Yeah, women and young women in particular face enormous barriers to income generation, whether that's through formal employment, which young people in general face a lot of difficulties engaging in formal employment. So the approaches that USAID has been looking at and that we're looking at in these programs are around entrepreneurship and income generating activities for young women. So not necessarily thinking about formal employment, but ways that these young women can make money in their communities. Both of these programs are dealing with young mothers. So childbearing is another huge barrier that they're trying to overcome through having accessible spaces for these young women to gather and learn with their children and providing that kind of support, which is very crucial. Dealing with a lot of stigma, especially with the young mothers with disabilities, and trying to break down that community stigma so that people are more likely to engage with these young women in their entrepreneurship activities, and dealing with a lot of cultural and family barriers as well. But there are bright spots. In Uganda, we actually, when we were there earlier this year, we were observing a training of the young women for Safe Plan. And one of the young women had actually gone into labor the day before. And so her father was there in her place observing the training because he didn't want her to miss out on any of the trainings. So though there are some cultural barriers, there are some bright spots and some attitudes are changing because family members and community members are realizing that when these young women have opportunities, that it benefits them all.
That's a great story. As you were explaining, not all women in particular are not a monolithic population. It's different. Their particular needs and the barriers that they have are different in different contexts. And this particular set of programs are intentionally looking at those who are more marginalized and have particular needs that not all women face. So it's also difficult to find and reach these types of populations. It just so happens that a lot of the USAID-funded programs that we do are not necessarily always reaching the most marginalized and the most vulnerable. So in this initiative, what were the ways that the program was intentional about working with marginalized populations and reaching them?
In Uganda, they're working with this rural community, out-of-school young women. So being very intentional about going to that community because otherwise these women would not have any access to these kinds of training opportunities. Being very intentional and using a community selection process to identify the women that the community sees as most in need of this training and that they support to be involved. And in Kenya, they have identified this community of disabled young mothers because of the extreme amount of barriers that they traditionally have to income generation. So both are being very intentional and specific about the populations that they're targeting because of the need that those populations have and that these organizations can reach them.
Can you say a little bit more about the selection process that was used in the Safe Plan program?
I can say a little bit what they've told me, and then we can dive in with them more. But my understanding is that they work with community members, elders, and other leaders so that there's buy-in in the community for the young people to be participating in the programs from the community side, from the family side, and also from the young people themselves. So it's not a just show up and sign up for this program. It's someone approaches you and says, we really think you would benefit from this. The community is supportive of you participating. And here's how we're going to make sure that this works for you and is a successful experience. So I think that intentional community selection and engagement process makes sure that everything from they help the young people get there for the training, they protect the equipment on site. And so there's really the community sees the value of the young people being involved and sees them having positive outcomes as a result of their involvement. And I think Safe Plan has a lot to teach us about how to do that intentional community engagement.
Well, I'm really looking forward to learning more from them about that particular approach. USAID is putting even more emphasis recently on engaging the private sector in its programming as a way to leverage funding from other sources that aligns with USAID's goals. For the Young Women Transform Prize, this has been designed as a public-private partnership. So in addition to USAID's funds, we are also partnered with Standard Chartered Bank as well as Volvo. How are these companies identified and what are they bringing to the table to this partnership?
So they were identified through a process with USAID when they approached potential partners for this prize, wanting to bring on monetary and capacity building support for the grantees of the prize. So each of them have brought different expertise and resources to bear on the project. They were all involved in the selection process as subject matter experts in employability and entrepreneurship and corporate social responsibility. And we've been able to use some of the private funds to fund purchases and the grants that would otherwise not be made possible by U.S. government funds, which are a bit more restrictive in how they can be used for certain kinds of purchases, like agricultural products, for example. So it gave us a flexibility to fund projects that USAID would not normally be able to fund because of those more restrictive rules. So it gave a really great flexibility to those organizations to make those purchases. We also have been able to leverage some of their expertise in terms of capacity building to provide some support to grantees on the management side.
Well, Lindsay, I'm almost finished packing. I've got a few more things to do. I know that you've been busy getting the final pieces in order. We're really looking forward to this trip and to see what comes out of it. We hope everybody listening will continue to follow along on our journey, and together we'll be learning a lot more about what youth-led, women-led programming really looks like on the ground. And one final note before we sign off, I want our listeners to know that all of the lessons learned generated from these trips are contributing to the learning questions that USAID has identified as part of the Youth Workforce Development Learning Agenda. And you can find those learning questions on education links at the URL www.edulinks.org. You're listening to the Young Women Transform podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. We will be releasing weekly episodes as we travel to Uganda and Kenya to talk directly to the prize grantees.